Welcome to the SF Squeecast, in which a group of science fiction and fantasy professionals squee about things SF-nal in a never-ending panel discussion of vague positivity. I am your brand new moderator, Michael Damian Thomas. Today I am joined by SF Squeecast regulars Elizabeth Baer.
Hello there.
Shauna McGuire.
Hail the glow cloud.
And our special, super special guest, who is stepping in at last second, Rob Mesnam, who is author of the books Nexus and his newly out, it is out right now, Crux, right, Nex? Right, Mez?
Yeah, out for about 2 weeks. Hi there.
Woo! Hi, Mez.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you.
Yay!
Well, thank you for joining us. Today we are first going to start. Sean and Squee will be about Welcome to Night Vale. Welcome to Night Vale.
Only because she beat me to it.
Everybody.
I'm fast and stealthy.
She got her flag in it first.
Yay.
Well, at least that means you can Squee with me.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
There will be actual discussion Squee.
Gasp.
Gasp. So for those of you who don't know, Welcome to Night Vale. Welcome to Night Vale is a podcast that's presented as a radio show about a fictional town called Night Vale.
Welcome to Night Vale is about a fictional town called Night Vale.
Oh, yeah.
You're welcome there, Michael?
Thank you, Wikipedia.
No, we're really not welcome there.
It's created by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, and voiced by Cecil Baldwin. So, Shannon, why don't you tell us about Welcome to Night Vale?
Welcome to Night Vale is pretty much exactly what it says on the tin. It is a Lake Wobegon style radio show about a city that is it's a small town, really, and it's kind of what you'd get if you crossed Freaky Links with the complete works of Stephen King with me after I haven't been allowed to sleep for 4 days. So it's a friendly little slice of life radio cast, supposedly done by the Night Vale Community Radio Station, about a town where the sun sets early, the clocks aren't real, the cactus are, there is no dog park, and scientists are best identified by their flawless and perfect hair. It's bizarre. It's deeply strange. It has the single best example of fandom as actual virus, not just viral fandom, but fandom as infectious thing that I've seen in a long time, because Night Vale has been going on for over a year, and yet for about 8 months, it was in its latency period. No one seemed to know about it, and then it exploded everywhere overnight. Just suddenly Tumblr and Twitter and everywhere exploded with Night Vale everything. So we're all checking it out to try and figure out what the hell is going on. And for all that it is everything I have said, it's this weird little show. It's 20-minute increments about weird goings on in a weird little town where logic is really not key. The very first episode is partially about the opening of the new Night Vale dog park. Dogs are not allowed in the dog park. People are not allowed in the dog park. Do not look directly
at the dog park. There is no dog park.
I don't know who told you there was a dog park, but we're going to have you reprogrammed if you keep talking about the dog park, which is not, after all, there. Every episode contains a musical guest, which is introduced by, and now, the weather. And then random music. I mean, it's strange. It's silly. It shouldn't be serious at all. It is also a phenomenally popular, I think it's currently one of the top podcasts in the world because it went boom so quickly. It's a phenomenally popular, essentially, radio show, the center of which is a queer romance between Cecil and Carlos, the perfect, beautiful scientist with the perfect, beautiful hair who comes to town in the first episode. And Carlos is explicitly a person of color. So it is a gay romance with at least one non-Caucasian participant. Cecil's race and description are never given. They want you to fill that in yourself. And in fact, the creators, when people have asked them, have flat said, we're never going to tell you what Cecil looks like. Like, you don't need to know. Cecil is a voice on the radio. Cecil can be anything you want. It's never strange. That's the normalizing aspect around which they have built everything else, is this very sweet romance between these two men, one of whom is a radio host and one of whom is hoping to get out of Night Vale before the Lovecraftian horrors eat everyone, which is going to happen. It's beautiful social commentary wrapped in a great big shell of flamboyant silliness. It's absolutely beautiful. It's very addictive. I recommend downloading the whole thing and listening to it, because there is nothing better. It's also completely free. You can get all of Night Vale and not pay a penny, but if you're like the rest of us, you'll probably wind up donating just to keep Night Vale going after that, because it is so fantastic. I don't recommend listening to The Sandstorm or 1 year later while you are either at work or in a public place, as starting to sob or starting to go, oh my God, there's so much blood. Those don't play well with one's coworkers. I really did. We got to the thing with the thing, and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much blood, and all my coworkers just talk. They're like, Shannon, where's the blood, Shannon? Where is it? Is it here? Because you know, they do work with me.
Nobody is ever surprised when you're having a carry moment.
Not well, we've had at least two incidents where just oceans of blood came to this office because of me. So there's a little bit of jumpiness that I think is kind of justified on their part. Also, the beautiful thing about Night Vale, to a degree, is the fandom that's grown up around it. Like any fandom, you've got your fringe shouty elements. I think that's kind of unavoidable. But if you go and look at the Night Vale tags on Tumblr, there are these huge, beautiful repositories of art. There's an entire community dedicated to the concept of Carlos being a person with a disability, and Cecil just hasn't bothered to mention it on the radio because Cecil is kind of a very unreliable narrator, but because he wouldn't care. Carlos is still perfect and beautiful. There are Cecils of pretty much any race that you want to find Cecil art of. There are even some very, very strong communities based on the theory that Cecil looks like whatever you want him to look like. And just the art and the creativity that's coming out of this community is fabulous. It's huge and inclusive. The only thing I can say that I wish about Night Vale is that we had a little more female involvement. And they've noticed that. So you've got intern Dana, who's showing up more and more. In fact, was voiced by Jessica Nicole on the most recent episode. There's old woman Josie out by the car dealership who has a house full of angels. And then there's the faceless old woman who lives in your house and would really like your Wi-Fi password. So they're working on making sure everyone has a place in Night Vale. It's kind of beautiful. I'm applying for a tourist visa. I will never be seen again, but I'll be happy, and I probably won't miss any deadlines. So
the other thing is that it's, there are certain aspects of it that are, you mentioned the fan art. There is somebody who has done a map.
Oh God, yes.
Have
the
you
map.
Seen this? This gorgeous, gorgeous map of basically everything we know about Night Vale and where everything is, or isn't in the case of the dog park. With its 12-foot high obsidian walls that don't exist. And you mentioned the social commentary very briefly. One of my favorite things about Night Vale is its subversiveness, its level of just taking the piss out of the curiarchy, the military industrial complex, the NSA, anybody. You talk about punching up. These guys are punching up at things so far out of reach it's almost a little worrying to listen to sometimes.
Yes.
You also mentioned that there are certain things you don't want to listen to at work. I recommend, also I got very addicted to it, and the dog was getting a lot of extra walks because I listened to podcasts on my dog walks. And while walking through the Lovecraftian New England countryside and graveyards, remember the photo I sent you from the graveyard, Shannon?
Yes.
While listening to Street Cleaning Day in the twilight.
Oh God!
Cleaning Day. Remain calm. Run. I did check over my shoulder a couple of times, especially since I'm relatively certain my local vampire has a graveyard, or my local graveyard has a vampire, as there is a tomb with a giant boulder pushed up against the door.
Nice. Bear just mentioned that Night Vale punches at the NRA. They've actually recently started selling Night Vale NRA bumper stickers through Topotico. The Night Vale NRA has some unique slogans. Guns don't kill people. It's impossible to be killed by a gun. We are all invincible to bullets, and it's a miracle. Guns don't kill people. We are all immortal souls living temporarily in shelters of earth and meat. Guns don't kill people. Blood loss and organ damage do.
That's my personal favorite.
I really like, if you say guns kill people one more time, I will shoot you with a gun and you will coincidentally die. A list of things that kill people. Number one, conceivably anything. Number two, not guns. And they have no shame and no fear. They're wonderful.
Yes, they are. They are really, and they do lovely. The characterizations are wonderful and complex, and they go out of their way to let you know that there is an overarching plot, which is seen in the cracks and the crevices, because Cecil is totally oblivious to it. He doesn't care. He's totally fixated on getting into Carlos's pants. And dealing with his many ex-boyfriends, which is one of the things that I find very amusing, is that every so often somebody will just wander through and we'll get the distinct suspicion that they and Cecil have some history, like the Scoutmaster or Steve Carlisle.
Really think that Cecil used to date Steve Carlsberg because...
Carlsberg, sorry.
How else could Steve Carlsberg be so terrible?
That's the only possible way he could be that absolutely hateful, is if he was an ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. There's also the Apache Tracker, who I think is almost the best example of how Night Vale approaches things. He's this weird white dude who runs around in full stereotypical Native American headdress and buckskins and claims to use ancient Indian magics to do things. He is inevitably referred to as a racist asshole. Like, they're just, the Apache Tracker did a thing, but let's talk about how terrible he is instead of talking about the thing.
His name is, in fact, the Apache Tracker, that racist jerk.
Yeah.
Or that white racist who dresses up as an Indian.
There's an absolutely fantastic Welcome to Night Vale fan trailer that someone cut together using Radioactive as the song. It's beautiful. If you go to YouTube and type in Welcome to Night Vale Radioactive, and they did their fan casting of everyone on the show, of course. They used the gentleman from the IT squad as Cecil, which I thought was just brilliant casting. And they used Johnny Depp in the recent Lone Ranger movie as the Apache Tracker.
Nice.
Oh, God. That's so perfect.
Yes. It really was. If you haven't listened to Welcome to Night Vale, it's totally free. And the first episode is only a 20-minute commitment. So it's not like you'll become addicted and wind up spending hours upon hours obsessing over this weird little radio show like the rest of us. You're different. You're immune. just give them that one little hit on episode one. You'll be safe. I promise.
Okay. I think that may set the record for most squeeing about a product ever.
And now the weather.
And moving on. Next up, Mez will be telling us about the works of, and of course this is because this is my first moderating, I do get a name that I have to work with, Hannu Rajaniemi.
I think his name is Hannu Rajaniemi, but at Worldcon, Paul Cornell pronounced it Hannu Rajaniemi. So Hannu, if you're listening, drop me an email, buddy, and let me know how it's actually pronounced. But I want to squee about his books. Hannu is a relatively new Finnish author. He's got two novels out, The Quantum Thief, that I think has been squeed about on Squeecast before, and its sequel, The Fractal Prince, came out last year, and the third one, The Causal Angel, I know he's working on now, and it's just about done. It'll come out, I think, in the next few months. And full disclosure, Hanu and I have become mutual fans, and we've met in person. I'm a fan of his, so I'm squeeing. I might be a little bit tainted, but I loved his books before I met him, okay?
It happens a lot around here.
I know. That's what it's like, right? So why I want to squee? So I read the Quantum Thief, and I was just utterly blown away. I was a little mystified. It's a hard book in a certain way. It's really tailored for people who've read hard sci-fi and have a grasp or have been exposed to this idea of a singularity might happen. AIs might have runaway explosive computational capabilities, and there might be uploads of our brains into computers. And Hanu does this thing that good authors often do, which is he doesn't explain. He just drops things on you and trusts you to figure it out from context. Like, you know when you're watching a movie sometimes and there's people next to you and something happens in the movie, and if you trust the people who've made the movie, you don't understand what just happened. But if you trust the people who've made the movie, you trust the director, you trust the writers, you trust that it will get explained later on. And somebody starts ribbing you and you're like, what? What did that happen? What did that mean? You're like, I don't know. Like, just watch. So with Hanu's books, you have to just be willing to do that and have to just be willing to wait. So that is one caveat about the books. But the reward for that is this, in my mind, almost completely unique mix of three ingredients that don't come together very often in sci-fi for me. One is this incredible, like, grandeur of hard sci-fi. This is a fairly unique vision of inside the solar system, hard sci-fi, 300 years in the future, sort of post-singularity, if you will, when it's uploaded mega mines the size of small moons with billions of or trillions of times the computational power of a single human mind warring against a tribe of quantum entangled gamer geek consortiums that have themselves gone post-human in a very complex war. So that's one aspect of it. That's a very unique picture. Two is this very funny, dry wit, these sardonic characters that move very fast. The protagonist is this post-human thief, and he is funny, and there's not a lot of humor in sci-fi. And three is it's poetry. He actually has this command of the English language. He's a Finn, but he writes in English. He has this command of the English language and this turn of phrase that I think is just glorious. He writes about falling upon the quantum filth behind a superstring, or about a sunset or a sunrise, or about a space battle or an epic con in ways that I just find just incredibly beautiful. So I personally think we're going to look back on Hanu's books 10, 20 years from now and think that these were just kind of masterpieces of sci-fi of this decade.
Has anyone else read these books?
Sean?
No, not yet. I really do love, though, what you said about his use of language, because I found that to be very true of the Finnish authors that I've read and of the German authors that I've read. English is this enormous, flexible beast. And for the most part, we only tend to see it used by American authors and by authors from the United Kingdom. And there are great linguistic differences between those two groups and even between me in California and Bear out in New England. But seeing English used by someone who didn't grow up in one of those settings, you get it to do things, tricks, you never would have thought possible. So that's kind of amazing, and that makes me want to read it even more now that you've said that.
I missed most of the conversation because Windows 7, that's why.
Windows 7!
That's yes, strong exactly. Evidence against the singularity right there, I would say.
However, I am now back because rebooting fixes everything. I absolutely agree about Hanu's use of language. I've only read the first book, And I think that that's the thing that really elevates it, is this fluidity. The poetical influence that flows through all of the language. I was in Sweden in 2011, and I will be going to Finland next year. Mm. And as I'm sure Shannon knows, because I think she's had some similar touristing recently. Everybody in the Scandinavian countries speaks better English than I do.
Yeah, that's my experience as well, actually.
And my friend Amanda Downham and I were there, and we had a slow day, and we were going to spend it in the hotel room watching Swedish TV and you know, eating takeout like you do. So we watched Swedish TV. We watched The Equalizer and part of a James Bond marathon and an episode of MacGyver. And we had taught ourselves a little bit of Swedish, you know, and people patted us on the head and were like, "Oh, you're so cute. What do you want?" It was the only time we used the Swedish was to talk to an Italian guy who was running a restaurant. So I think it's growing up. Obviously, people in Finland and Sweden grow up immersed in this foreign language, but also with the root of their own language. And I think it has a profound influence on. They use English with the facility of a native, but with this outsider's perspective that makes it fabulous, I guess is what I'm trying to say at very great length.
Yeah, maybe they have more emphasis on actually learning the full extent of what you can do with the language and learning the exact right word to use in the right situation.
Yes.
Well, for those who have read The Quantum Thief but haven't read The Fragile Prince yet, what I found was I read The Quantum Thief and I loved it. I was a little mystified and confused by the end. Reading The Fragile Prince, A, I thought The Fragile Prince was better than The Quantum Thief. B, it made me like The Quantum Thief better and understand what happened in the first book better. So it's one of those series in a certain sense.
Cool. Yeah, the only thing that bothered me a little bit about The Fractal, wait, I've lost track now.
Quantum Thief was the first one.
The Quantum Thief is, I just wish male writers would find, I loved the fact that he had a lesbian protagonist. I wish male writers would find a way to introduce lesbian protagonists that does not involve them having sex. I just, it's such a bugbear for me, but that's a pet peeve. And you know, I think it's a great book.
Okay. With that, let us move on to Bear Squee now that she is back and all is well with headphones. Bear,
I discarded the headphones entirely. I just
away with
you're
you headphones.
Low quality me.
those Windows 7 loving headphones that cause trouble. Bear will be squeeing about Bat for Lashes.
Yes, well, Bat for Lashes is Natasha Khan. She's a British singer-songwriter, as you said, of English and Pakistani extraction. Mm-hmm. And she is creepy and fabulous and awesome and of interest to science fiction and fantasy fans because she deals with a lot of science fiction and fantasy tropes in her lyrics. The ones that aren't songs about two people, one of whom is in love with somebody else, which is probably like 90% of her catalog. And then the other 10% is science fiction and fantasy stuff. The first song of hers that came to my attention was, as with many of us, What's a Girl to Do? Because of its bizarre video involving people in bunny suits riding bicycles. It's a very nifty song, and the video is really disturbing. Then I went poking around, and I discovered this wonderful track, Horse and I, which is every farm boy makes good epic fantasy ever in 3.5 minutes. protagonist wakes up, is told that they have a destiny, is given a horse and a crown, and sent off to find it.
Nice. If many could be oh, three it's and wonderful. A half minutes.
I've never three read that three. Book. I've never read a book like that, Bear.
Never, ever, man.
That sounds very original to me.
It's a new thing.
It's a totally new thing. This has never happened in yes, this has never happened in a fantasy novel before. You are the chosen one. No, I don't want to be the chosen one. But you are. You must go find your destiny. Here's your horse. All right then. I guess I'm the chosen one. And off she goes. She has another song about a siren, which is I won't spoil it, but you should go listen to it, and it's on YouTube. And her new album, including songs like The Haunted Man and All Your Gold. All Your Gold is the one that I've been listening to on endless repeat. It's not particularly SFNL, but again, go find the video. I won't spoil it. This would be one of the 90% of the catalog about extremely self-aware dysfunctional relationships. I think I have a fondness for those as an old Tom Waits fan and an old Richard Thompson fan. Yeah. You know, there are those songs about dysfunctional relationships that don't know they're dysfunctional. And then there are the ones that are like, yes, we're all crazy here and we're tearing shreds off each other. Let's sing about it. I have a fondness for those.
Yeah.
And she has a wonderful voice and really she falls into what I would call the creepy girl singing about awful things subgenre.
one of my favorites.
You know, not quite Ecto, but in that ballpark.
Yeah.
And she dances like a geek and I love her. I love her so very much. Nerd approved. Go find out.
Is anyone else listening to Bat for Lashes?
No, but I want stickers now that just say nerd approved.
Nerd approved.
Well, I think you have could that be another ribbon?
Do you have any idea how many ribbons I'm already ordering for the next year?
I'm going to guess at least 75 different ones.
Michael, that can be your ribbon.
That could be
yeah,
my
there you
ribbon.
Go.
I need a ribbon.
You need a ribbon. Everybody needs ribbons. I have not, but I will look her up. That sounds really fabulous.
And it has been yeah. on my, and I have actually been, it's been on my radar, and I just haven't sat down and listened. So now I will.
You too. And she's pretty. And I bet she smells nice. Okay, that was creepy.
Yeah, what are we defining as smells nice? Like, right now I smell like candy corn and blood. Do I smell nice?
To yes. some people.
Maybe, yeah.
I appreciate that none of you are like, where's the blood from? Like,
I was very close to buying candy corn this week. But
everyone should buy candy corn.
I'm still coming out of eating all the bad things at Worldcon, so I was like, ugh, I should not probably eat candy corn for lunch every day.
You ate at Worldcon?
Things.
Some of us do, Sean. And
I missed most of my lunches, though. So I did have these long dinners of, we're in the mall. Let's eat somewhere other than Hooters.
Okay, so this is terrible, but Hooters used to have really good salads. Like, there was a period in the mid-90s where if you wanted a chef's salad the size of a corgi...
Probably not containing any corgi.
No corgi was in it, unless that's where they got the ham. But the world's biggest chef salad went to Hooters. And so recently I was out with friends and we were near a Hooters and I got really excited. I was like, oh my god, let's go to Hooters. And they all looked at me like I had hit my head. But it was my turn to pick where we went for lunch. And then I had a fit of Hooters, just made no longer a giant chef salads. And this is my trauma for today.
I am writing
many,
angry
many
letters.
That...
Go on, Bear.
Oh, I was going to say, many things that used to be good were bad. But I actually was pretty proud of how I did at Worldcon. Although, if no one can find any smoked salmon anywhere in the world, it's because I ate it all. between the FinCon or between the Helsinki bid party and the Hugo Losers party. I ate all the smoked salmon, all of it, everywhere. It's like Husnock. It's gone now.
Well, at least you didn't eat all the corgi hams. So we have that.
Corgis have pretty big hams. Have you known any corgis?
Half my Tumblr is corgis doing cute things.
Yeah. That is a good description of Tumblr.
Yeah.
The other half is kittens.
Yes.
Did you see the underwear stealing cat?
No.
Yes, I saw my daily.
Yeah, it's on my Tumblr. It's stealing underwear out of a drawer.
Is that as good as the bear? Does it top the bear moving the garbage dumpster?
It equals it in a different way because the cat gets caught, and aww, it's very chillant.
Okay, I think I've lost. Okay, moving back to squeeing.
Yeah, you have lost control, Michael.
I have done a great job replacing Lynn with my corgi hams and Tumblr. Okay.
Given that Lynn normally loses control when we start threatening to kill her, you've actually done really well. You've
yes,
kept the malice contained.
Yes, less death threats, more corgis.
Yeah, less death threats. There's our title.
Yeah, that's going to be the motto of Michael's time as moderator. So Lynn, I don't understand why you said they were hard to control. They never killed me. They just mailed me kitten gifts. Sean is baking me a pie.
A corgi pie. Corgi.
No.
I'm sure Thomas has one of those around the house somewhere.
Maybe. All right, so moving back to squeeing, we will go to my squee, which is one of my, it might be my all-time favorite novel, China Mountain Zhang by Maureen McHugh. Mm. I actually came to this novel fairly late. It came out in 1992, was nominated for a bunch of awards, won the Tiptree and the Locus. And I had actually had dinner with Maureen and had not read anything by her. And then I read it and it was like, oh my God, thank God I didn't read this first because I would have been a complete obnoxious fanboy the entire dinner. What I love about China Mountain Zhang is it is so elegant and wonderful. For those who don't know, it's a mosaic novel that interweaves different stories, mostly following one character named Zhang, who is half Chinese, half Puerto Rican, in a future where America has kind of been subsumed into China. And we have colonies on Mars, and it follows different characters. But what one of the things I love most about it, other than is that you have these rich characterizations about people who really are not what I would call, you know, the people who greatly change their world. You know, much of the literature in our genre does tend to focus on characters who make these major impacts on their environment. Oh, and the thing I loved about this novel, it was so delicate about these human beings just living in these environments. Zhang himself is, along with being, you know, he is a gay man, and that is not legal in some parts of the world, and he needs to be played down in other parts. And he's just learning how to be an engineer and succeed in his world. And there is another arc that happens, which may be one of my all-time favorite love stories ever, that happens on Mars, about just a woman named Martine, who is just a practical middle-aged farmer and beekeeper, who just falls in love with a man who ends up with her, and his daughter is with them. And there's just these beautiful, gorgeous snapshots. And I know Lynn has talked about Maureen's writing before. What I love most about it is how it can be so simple and elegant and yet convey so many things at different levels. Every word just feels like the correct word at that moment. And every single moment of this novel, I just fell in love with. This is just, I think, one of the most gorgeous works of prose I've ever read. And I want to go back to it right now once I finish this podcast.
That is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful novel. And I think when I first read it, I think I was too young to appreciate it. I was in my late teens, probably. And I went back and reread it in my 20s and liked it a lot more. And as you say, it's a witness to history novel. It's really a novel about here's what people's lives are like in this future world, rather than here's the action hero with the lightsaber. And I think that's much harder for an audience used to seeing Pacific Rim on the screen to get into in a certain way, but it makes it a much kind of deeper and subtler work.
Well, yeah, it's like a people's history of the future.
Yeah.
Did anyone else, Bear or Shannon, have you read it?
I'm amazed it took us that long to get to Pacific Rim, Michael.
We are now going to drift together as a podcast and fight.
God, no!
My bad.
Who's not allowed in my head? All of you. You wouldn't like it in there. But no, I haven't read it, but that's a great endorsement. That sounds really interesting. She said, looking mournfully at her to-be-read pile.
Yes.
Which will soon eat the world.
We have bookcases. Double
stacked. Yes, they're full.
Yeah, ours are
extra
full.
So many books. And people like Shannon keep writing new ones daily.
Yeah.
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 I do that. I only have 4 books coming out in 2014.
Yay.
I rest my case.
And how many short stories? And
shut up.
Novellas? It's a full-time occupation reading you.
Yeah, and what's really sad is that I both have people going, you know, write faster and slow down. Like, it's like constantly being in driver's ed.
Yes.
At least none of us have brake pedals.
No,
that's good.
I can think of some authors who need them.
This is the Squeecast, Michael.
And I love them. I love them.
I can think of more authors who need accelerators, actually. So.
Yes, accelerators.
Because we want to squee more.
My books need accelerators.
Yeah.
I love your books. Why do they need accelerators?
So that they will be. So that I can write them faster. I don't know. So that you need an accelerator. Yeah, so that it doesn't take a subjective lifetime to write the last 100 pages of each one. Actually, it's that's the only bit that needs the accelerator.
Yeah, I could roll with that.
Okay.
One of my favorite Stephen King books, and it's no one else's favorite, I don't think, but the Tommyknockers, there's a lady in there who writes Westerns who finds a way to plug it. She builds a typewriter that plugs into your head so she can go to bed, and when she wakes up, the book is done.
Nice.
Not first draft done. Perfect. Done. That is what I want. I mean, it kills her in fairly short order. Hey. I take it.
Sacrifice for your art.
Yeah, except my dreams wouldn't make very good novels.
I'd write a lot of books about Disneyland.
They're my dreams are narrative light, shall we say.
Okay.
They're more, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job controlling us today, Michael.
Yeah, I should. Okay, so we should probably wrap this up and move on to the questions for Mez.
Yay!
I've been warned about this.
As well you should be. Oh, the look of fear on Howard Taylor's face during the last podcast.
I just shoved Darth Vader's sack in his face.
That is true.
So during our live broadcast at Worldcon, Shannon talked about the Halloween celebrations near her hometown, which actually used to be my hometown. And I said that the next month, which is the October Squeecast, that I would talk about the celebrations in my hometown. I think I've mentioned many times that I live on an island off the coast of Maine. It's called Peaks Island, and we are one of the best-kept Halloween secrets around, I think. Every year, Scott Nash, who is a quite accomplished writer and illustrator himself, the illustrator of the Flat Stanley books, among many, many other things, and has written a couple of wonderful YA and middle grade fantasy series lately, decorates his house, but obviously that doesn't stop there. It is a theme that is totally unknown to everybody on the island until Halloween. The people who are involved, the various artists and performers, show up at the house and are given costumes and the theme told only to them. So you just have to go in order to find out what's happening this year. The first year that I went, because I almost always have a book coming out on Halloween, it took 3 years living on this island before I got to go. We were racing home from World Fantasy, actually, and I was getting all these texts from my friends on the island going, where are you, where are you? You have to see it this year. And we walked up the hill towards Scott's house and heard disco music, which was disappointing to me. I had heard so many things about the previous year whose theme had been the holy war of candy versus teeth, and it had featured a full gospel choir and a crazy dentist chair and all kinds of other things. I'd heard so much about it that disco did not exactly fulfill my expectations. But I rounded the corner and saw a giant disco dance floor covered in robots and a huge neon sign that said Robo Agogo in the trees. There were robot jack-o'-lanterns. People were in these enormous metal and neon costumes with voice converters to make them sound like robots. There was an Elvis bot. There was a robot monkey DJ. There were dogs dressed up as robots running all around, and everybody just dancing to robot music and Halloween music to their heart's content. And it was amazing. I actually teared up a little bit because I had become used to West Coast Halloweens, which often feature municipal trick-or-treating hours and no going out after dark and a lot of really regulated stuff. And all of a sudden, it was a New England Halloween with a spooky moon out and everybody just dancing toward the stars. And it was amazing. We actually have a second haunted house as well, which is genuinely scary and has cauldrons full of lobsters and body parts, which reminds me that this last year's theme was the lobster's revenge, and the whole house was full of giant people in giant lobster suits hacking apart humans and boiling them. There was a big sign made to look like the various lobster shacks around here that said, it's not screaming, it's steam escaping, which is what people tend to say about lobsters when you boil them, but this time it referred to people. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary expression of Halloween and artistic ability and community, because it's Scott gets together a lot of people from the island and a lot of people from the art college in town, and I absolutely try my hardest never to miss it again, because it's such a special part of my very favorite season and my very favorite holiday. And I think that everybody should come to my island and experience this as soon as you possibly can. So that is my squee for the week, or for the month. And I want to thank Scott Nash for making such a magical event on our little pocket of Maine.
Hello?
My headset. So.
Hello.
Okay, sorry.
We're back.
Hello. Is everyone back?
I think in panic, I knocked my headset out of my USB, and I think that took everybody out. That was clearly my fear about the upcoming questions.
Terror. Or your fear of Darth Vader's gonads.
That's also terrifying.
They are pretty fair. Okay. Moving on to the questions. Mez, Paul wants to know, what do you most fear?
Darth Vader's gonads. Clearly, I fear these questions. Otherwise, I wouldn't have knocked out my headset just now.
Yes. Seanan would like to know, can she have a cookie?
Yes, absolutely. It may have to have candy flavors and blood.
I love you.
I know you.
Okay. Seanan would like to know, what's the first book you remember reading on your own initiative?
Battlefield Earth by L. Ron Hubbard.
Wow.
Wow.
All 1,000 pages of it. I was 10 years old. I read it on a cross-country road trip with my parents.
And you turned out okay.
Somehow. Some would argue that.
And Paul would like to know, and I will not sing this like Paul, sadly, but what have you done today to make Paul feel proud?
To make Paul feel proud? I have outlined my next novel.
Woo!
In Excel, mind you.
I'm proud.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm disturbed.
Excel is an amazing outlining tool. But as I posted on Facebook and Twitter, I'm really slightly, mostly humorously peeved that if I type in a date like 11/3/40, Excel assumes that means November 3rd, 1940, instead of obviously November 3rd, 2040.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's minor.
I just tell it to format cell to general so that it no longer fills anything in automatically for me.
Yeah, but I wanted to like sort all my scenes by date. This is a new thing I'm trying. It's actually typing in, because I have like multiple plot lines. So when I actually put in the date and time that things happen, this is an experiment. And I'll be able to sort every scene in the book by when it actually happens. So we'll see if it works.
Wow.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. Bear would like to know, what do you want on your tombstone?
What do I want on my tombstone? Have a party.
Okay. Bear would like to know, what is your favorite joke, and feel free to tell it.
My very favorite joke is completely X-rated, and I
will. We're okay with that.
Go for it.
No, no.
Go for it. Seriously.
No, 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 no.
Yes, 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 yes.
No, 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 no.
We'll let him be a good person. What's your second favorite joke?
Second favorite joke. Can we get the next question, and then I'll come back to that?
Okay. Okay, well, we don't want to ruin anyone's reputation here.
No. No, that never happens.
Okay, I'll give you a joke. I'll give you a joke from my latest novel. It's not my favorite joke, but it's the first one that comes to mind, and it's a pair of jokes. What does Confucius say about a man who runs in front of car?
What?
He gets tired. What does Confucius say about man who chases car?
What?
He gets exhausted. Clearly, you guys don't appreciate the subtlety of my humor.
No.
I'm making a sad Muppet face at you.
Okay. Kat would like to know, what is your quest?
What is my quest? My quest is to bring more wonderfulness into the world.
Aww.
That is a nice quest.
That's very earnest.
Whoops. We're back. Mrs. Joke killed Skype.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right. Lynn would like to know, what is your favorite guilty pleasure?
My favorite guilty pleasure. L. Ron Hubbard at one point. But that hasn't been the case for a long time. Jeez Louise, my favorite guilty. Some of those are also X-rated. Okay, I'll tell you one. This is a little bit complex, I guess, but I have in my backyard, and I live in Seattle, where summer is like, you know, there's 3 months of nice weather in Seattle. Sorry, Shannon, but I have a backyard, which is not that common in Seattle, and I have a very large kiddie pool, basically. The pool, it's like a 12-foot, like, inflatable pool, basically, and it's just big enough that you can put a chair in it and sit. So my favorite guilty pleasure is in the summer, I will put a chair in the pool, and I'll drag a plastic table to the edge of the pool, and I'll put my laptop on the table, and I'll sit in the pool and write. And I love that. That's my outdoor office.
Wow. Yeah.
You are a braver man than I am.
Yeah, you know, there's like, anyway, I've survived every one of those sessions so far.
But you're plugged in.
Well, the laptop is plugged in. The laptop is not in the water with me.
I hope not.
I mean, the laptop has survived all those sessions so far, too.
Yay. Okay, Lynn would like to know, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word? I'm not sure I have one right now, but Callipygian. I have always enjoyed. I discovered this while studying for the SAT in high school, which means possessing very nice buttocks.
Nice. And, okay, let's see. Seanan is telling me I need to come up with a question for me as I do this on the fly. What place would you like to travel to that you have yet to visit?
I have traveled a lot. I love travel, but I've never been to India. So I'd like to see India.
India's beautiful.
That's what I hear. I hear that it's beautiful and amazing and intense.
So many snakes.
So many snakes. Snakes on a continent, on a subcontinent.
Okay. Those are all of our questions. Thank you, Mez, so much for joining us today on short notice.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yay!
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 Okay. So everyone, thanks for joining us. Thanks to our regular contributors, Bear, Paul, Shannon, and Kat. Special thanks to our webmaster, Dimitri Zagadulin, our techno producer, David McCone Chase, Jeff Bonoff at Mystic Fig Studios for the instrumentals of music by Sean McGuire, Katie Shuttleworth, who made our amazing logo, and to Lynn M. Thomas for general administrative support. I switched. It's a thing. We hope that you will join us next time. Same squee time, say squee channel.
What I was saying, I was very sad that, you know, I feel left out. Nobody told me that murder was going on.
Thomas, what have you got, Bobby? Did you find the caterpillar? No, you didn't find the caterpillar.
Now it's a lovely butterfly.
I don't know what that is, but you should either eat it or get it out of the room.